The Future of Aviation with 2008's CFI of the Year. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this AeroCast, and thanks for downloading us. At Lakeland this year, I had the chance to put the face with a name and talk for a few minutes with Max Trescott. Max is a NAFI Master CFI and was named 2008's CFI of the Year by the FAA's General Aviation Awards Program. I wanted to ask Max about his views on aviation safety and other issues, but first, I needed some clarification. I had thought the CFI of the Year program was related to NAFI's Master CFI program. Well, apparently they're actually completely separate.
Yes, that's true, though. Interestingly, the finalists, all eight of them from around the country, were all Master CFIs, but that's totally unrelated to the national awards program that the GA committee awards for four different categories, by the way. So not only is there a national CFI for 2008, but we also have avionics technicians, a mechanic, and also the FAST team representative. So there are four different awards.
You have a day job of sorts as a publisher. Tell us about that.
Well, I have a couple of day jobs, but I like to tell folks that I spend 5 days a week working on my publishing business, and I spend the other 5 days a week teaching flight instruction. So I'm really pretty much 24/7 in terms of aviation, both sides.
Okay, now you came from a background that actually has something in common with mine and a few other people. Both of us grew up within range of the same radio stations in Buffalo, New York. We even had the same favorite radio station. I ended up staying in radio for a long time. You ended up going on a different path. Tell us about the bullet points on your resume to get to where you are now.
Sure, that's true. I love broadcasting and became a disc jockey as soon as I was legal, which was 16, and I continued to do that for about 7 years. As I got out of college, after having worked for CBS for a brief period of time, I had to decide, boy, shall I use this new engineering degree that I have or not? And so I spent 25 years in high-tech marketing and sales with Hewlett-Packard, first on the East Coast and then later at their headquarters in Palo Alto, California, which is where I currently live.
I want to ask you what it means to be a Master CFI and then also what it means to be a CFI of the Year. How do both of those things happen?
Sure. The Master CFI program is something that was created by NAFI, the National Association of Flight Instructors, in conjunction with the FAA and other organizations to provide some level of recognition for folks who go above and beyond the basic day-to-day teaching. So they look for folks who are very broadly involved in a lot of different areas of aviation. In fact, there are four different categories of work that they're looking for. So in addition to teaching credentials, they're looking for what kind of pro bono work we're doing with volunteer groups, what kind of creation of media that we're doing, and what type of self-education that we're doing as well, too. And then anyone who's interested in becoming a Master CFI needs to submit a portfolio that details all of the activities in those different areas, and then it's evaluated by the board, and then if they agree, then become a Master or a CFI. There are about 450 CFIs around the world who are Masters. And then the National 2008 CFI of the Year, totally separate process, independent of NAFI. Essentially, that starts at the local FISDO level at the FAA. And so in my case, the San Jose FISDO nominated me as a representative for them for CFI of the Year, and that occurred late last year, I guess. And then they sent that to the Pacific Western region, which represents several western states, and I was then selected by the FAA to represent the western region. And then ultimately, those eight nominees from the FAA are all evaluated by the GA National Awards Committee, which has a number of people who are drawn from different parts of industry who then evaluate all of the portfolios and then decide, hey, who's it going to be? So I'm very happy to be chosen. Like, I know there are literally dozens of people that I know who could be standing here in this position. I'm happy to be representing CFIs because I think they're a dedicated, hardworking group of individuals and would like to see even more people become CFIs because there's a big need for that right now.
I was told at one time a few years ago that on paper in the FAA record database, There is approximately one CFI for every two flight students. Now, that includes guys who haven't instructed in years and still hold the certificate.
Right.
How many actual flight instructors do you think there are working in the U.S. actively right now?
Well, I think the database shows there's about 91,000 CFIs, and I would imagine many of them are working, but not necessarily as flight instructors. I think many of those folks have become airline pilots, for example, and so they pass through the flight instructor ranks relatively quickly, even more quickly these days, because the airline minimums have been relatively low, so people just haven't been staying around. So I can't really tell you how many active flight instructors there are, though I can tell you that one large company did a survey last summer, and they found that within their organization, nationwide, they were short about 1,000 CFIs, and they estimated nationwide there was a need for about 4,000 CFIs as of last June. That may have changed, but there's definitely been a shortage in the industry for a while.
what do we do about that? I mean, obviously, Boeing released a study not too long ago that said that aviation overall is going to need 18,000 new pilots per year for something like 20 years. And we've already seen Part 141 flight schools tearing their hair out trying to keep their instructors because at 250.3 hours or something, they get snatched up by the regionals and put in a right seat somewhere. That's the point where the water's going to run fastest through the creek. We have to find enough new CFIs to put into the system to keep enough CFIs working even after a lot of them get plucked away. How are we going to do that?
Right, that's a really good point. And I would guess every one of those 18,000 pilots will probably have a CFI at some point along the way. So, yeah, that's a fundamental necessity to get more CFIs out there. Some of the things that I've seen happening over the last year to 18 months are some of the salaries are rising for CFIs. Some of the flight schools are offering greater benefits to the CFIs. In fact, I know at least one school told me that they pay more than the airlines do, and that some of those folks who are airline related, they try and keep them around longer to help them build up the cushion of money they're going to need for those lean days when they get their first airline job. So I think there's definitely a great need. And one of the other major ways that I think is we're starting to see more of the need filled is through folks like you and I, who may not necessarily be in our teens anymore or early 20s and be thinking about airline careers. And I think there's a huge opportunity for anybody who's looking to get a more advanced rating or to really heighten their whole aviation game, if you will, move it up a step. So anybody who's got their instrument rating and thinking about their commercial ought to really think about getting their CFI rating as well and becoming part of the pool that's going to stick around and become part of the long-term cadre of instructors.
What about guys who are retiring from the airlines? Is there a role for them in this? Because obviously they're used to making good money. But if the pay of flight instructors is coming up at that rate, I don't know, is it maybe beat being a greeter at Walmart or driving the shuttle van for your local car service place? I mean, you know, there are those jobs out there.
I've never been a greeter, so I really can't compare that directly. But no, I think that historically there's been a lot of movement back and forth between the airlines. As furloughs occur, many of those folks then move back to CFI jobs. So I would imagine with all the bankruptcies we've had announced here just in the last 10 days, that many of those folks will be moving back directly into the CFI workforce. And that's probably a good thing, because what with the shortage, there has been difficulty in keeping instructors around. A lot of people have been frustrated that either they couldn't find an instructor or they had four instructors because they all moved on to the airline so quickly. So this is part of the natural ebb and flow that we've historically seen. So we're moving back in the direction where there are going to be more instructors around, and that's a good thing.
Well, what I was referring to specifically, though, Max, was the guys who have reached the mandatory retirement age.
Oh, sure.
At 65. I mean, obviously, a lot of them still want to fly, love flying, want to do something.
Right, and I really hope that they all come back to the right seat, because there's definitely a huge role for them. In fact, that role is probably growing even more as you look forward to all the VLJs that are going to start taking off here very shortly. Obviously, Cessna built, about 50 Mustangs last year, and you just start adding the numbers up. There's going to be a lot of need for mentor pilots, whether they're actually teaching or whether they're riding along with the new owners until they reach the required hours for insurance purposes. So yeah, I think there's a huge role for those people.
We're here at Lakeland talking to Max Trescott at the NAFI tent. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back. Paul Plack here at the NAFI tent at Lakeland, talking to Max Trescott, 2008 CFI of the Year. Max, we've talked about your background, what it means to be the CFI of the Year. We've talked about the current state of flight instruction. Right. Let's look into the future. Now, I see a couple of things, trends emerging here. One is that there seems to be a growing recognition that for general aviation to ever even remotely approach the safety record that commercial aviation has, we have to do something about flight instruction, currency, and proficiency.
Indeed.
Now, this is where it gets a little sticky, because any time there's a proposal to increase the training requirements for private pilots, say, there's going to be the FAA is going to want evidence, it's going to be demanded to present evidence that it will make a difference, and there are going to be general aviation advocacy groups who are programmed to jump in and kind of fight anything that raises the cost burden on their members without proof.
Right.
Where do we get out of that standoff?
Good question. As you describe it, there is a challenge there that I think everyone in the industry needs to kind of look at and figure out what do we need to do differently to go ahead and improve the safety record. And there has been progress over the years, but as you mentioned, it's no way comparable to what's gone on in the airlines. And frankly, it never will be. You know, the airline's a totally different game. You've got obviously two pilot operations. You have operations manuals that dictate when people fly. You know, as pilots, we probably could choose to create our own operation manuals, if you will. I looked at a couple of accidents that occurred recently where people took off in virtually zero visibility. One of those was a King Air, one was a Mooney. Both of those people crashed within 1 mile of the airport. Silly kind of thing to do. If those people just flew with Part 135 type operations manuals that they created for themselves, or even if they just simply had their own personal minimums where they said, you know, it is legal to take off in zero, but I choose to fly to a higher standard. I'm not going to take off unless I have at least, you know, X miles of visibility. Those accidents wouldn't have happened. So I think a lot of this comes back onto aeronautical decision making, and a lot of that comes back to CFIs helping pilots understand that even though they have a license, even though they have a wide range of options that they can pursue legally, they have to also be safe. So just because something is legal doesn't mean that it's also safe. So I don't know that we necessarily have to do a lot of changing to the requirements to become a pilot, but for sure I think that CFIs have a huge role to play in encouraging pilots to set higher standards for themselves when they fly every day.
A lot of smaller airports now are moving to a requirement that anyone with a plane based there has liability insurance. This, in turn, puts the ball in the insurance company's court in terms of deciding what requirements they will put on pilots before they'll insure them, or at least give them preferred rates. Do you see the insurance industry maybe playing a bigger role in the future than maybe even the FAA minimums in determining what is our minimum level of acceptable proficiency?
Well, they already provide some role in that regard today. Certainly anybody who's checking out at an airplane in their local club has usually some minimum number of hours, particularly for the higher performance aircraft. And those minimums are often driven by the insurance requirements of that particular FBO and their insurance carrier. So I think that's happening already today. And sure, it wouldn't surprise me if that continues to be a, you know, factor going forward in the future. Obviously, the insurance companies know how to make the bottom line work better, and making sure pilots know how to fly the airplanes they're flying is one way to do that.
Are there any initiatives within the manufacturer community that you're especially enamored of? I know Cirrus comes to mind as really trying to pioneer some things that will make us more proficient and safe.
Indeed. Cirrus has a great program which they've started recently, and I'm a Cirrus, a CSIP instructor, spend a lot of time teaching in Cirrus along with all the glass cockpit aircraft. In fact, that's all I really do these days. If it's got glass in the front, then I'm teaching in it. So they've got some online training programs to keep their instructors current, as well as things available for owners as well. So I think what we're seeing in an industry is a big move toward online training. And actually, I think aviation is a little bit slow to embrace that. Historically, those kinds of things have been done for, you know, 10 years or more in the high-tech industry where I come from. And, you know, everybody's just used to taking online courses to figure out how to get their job done. And so I think the more aviation embraces that, we're going to see more and more online courses, and that's got to help.
Well, and as we get more and more glass panels, even in smaller aircraft, we get into a situation where now the online can look very much like the real thing. And frankly, if you're going to make the maximum safety benefit out of the newer avionics, you're going to have that training.
Indeed. I think that's one of the big challenges, is that in the, you know, prior days, one could jump into virtually any airplane and figure out how to operate that VOR. We don't have that luxury anymore. So the challenge is going to be for those pilots who are flying, you know, maybe 20, 30 hours a year, and there are a lot of those folks who fly even less than that. And how do they stay current in some of the new technologies they have to, you know, require them to step their game up a little bit. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, those online kinds of things and CD-ROM courses, things like that, will provide a way for people between flights to kind of go back to the computer and kind of refresh themselves a little bit so that they're that much more prepared for the next flight. And there's no question, the more time they invest in doing those kinds of things up front, it's going to save them time and money versus when that very expensive fan starts to turn on the front of the airplane. That's not the ideal time to be learning for the first time, you know, how to operate those things.
All right, now that brings us to telling our viewers how they can get in touch with you or find out more about your flight instruction and also about your publishing business, which specializes in instruction for the G1000.
Sure. Probably the easiest way to find out about our publishing tools is go to the very short URL, which is g1000book.com, though we do a lot of other things just besides the G1000 book. And I also suggest they go out to my blog at maxtrescott.com, where they'll learn about a lot of the GA advocacy things that I'm working on, such as urging the FAA to improve the safety goals for the coming year, as well as, for example, working with the local airport groups prevent the closure of airports. And we have another one yet again in my backyard in San Jose, California. The Reed Hillview Airport is once again under fire this summer. So it's, as I said, I wear a lot of hats here, and I hope all your viewers get broadly involved in aviation and start working with their local support airport support groups as well, because I think we all have to contribute to make sure we preserve, you know, what we've got for the next generation.
Well, Max, we appreciate you taking a couple minutes out today. Congratulations on the award, and we look forward to more of your writings on Aero News and elsewhere.
Thanks very much, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
We'll have Max back to discuss the issues important to him in the near future. You'll soon be able to see video of this interview on Aero TV. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.